of the urgency. You sure that will work? Reacher nodded. One question first. Is it possible to preset an email to send at a certain time in the future? Of course. Okay, then. Put the image together. Paris turned back to her keyboard and trackpad, and after a couple of minutes' work, she showed Reacher the screen again. This time he said, "Good. Go ahead, send it." Paris hit a key. Done. Do you think he'll call? He will. In the meantime, here's another question. The little icons you get on computer screens that represent documents, can you name them anything you want? Pretty much. What's the property company called? Nashell's Property Partners, LLC. Could you make a document called something like NPP False Accounting Tranche 2? Easily. Could it be empty? Of course. Documents always start off empty. Okay. I want you to write an email with a pretty innocuous message. To whom it may concern, please see the attached file. Something like that. Add the empty NPP document. Just its icon. Address it to the finance desks at all the major papers. Set it to send in, say, 3 hours. And take a picture of it on the screen. A screenshot? If you say so. Paris got back to work, but before she had anything to show Reacher, her phone began to ring. She checked the screen. She said, "Numbers blocked," and passed him the handset. Reacher hit the answer button and said, "Yes." The voice on the line said, "Who is this?" "My name isn't important. What I want is, and what I'll do if I don't get it, that's critical." "You're wasting my time. Tell me, you saw the sample on your email. Unless I get what I want within 3 hours, the entire file will be sent to all the national newspapers." "Then what do you want?" "You, or someone you control, has taken 3 of my associates. You know the people I'm talking about. They are to be released. I'll send you the coordinates of the place where they are to be left." "3 hours? That's not possible. No, we both know what happened last time. We gave you 72 hours. Our man didn't return. We didn't get paid." Reacher pointed to Paris's laptop. She nodded. "Look at your email. You're about to receive a message. Look at it closely. You'll see that the clock is already ticking. The only way to stop it is to release my people. You know where we live. You could call an airstrike on our position, and it would make no difference. The email will be sent. Your life and your company will be destroyed. Any questions?" There was only silence on the line. Reacher said, "Good. Now for the full terms. Your guys are to leave a vehicle at the coordinates you will receive within 3 hours. My people will be in that vehicle, safe and well. Your guys will drive away. If they do not have a second vehicle of their own, they can take the white Ford F-150 that will already be there. We don't need it back. No one else will be present on site, but will be watching remotely. If you comply, the email will be canceled. If you don't, you can look forward to public humiliation, bankruptcy, and a couple of decades in the federal pen." Paris closed her laptop and put it and the ledger and the strategy book in a bag she took from her wardrobe. Then she said she needed the bathroom before they got back on the road. Reacher told her he'd wait downstairs, but not out of any sense of modesty, because he was half expecting her to climb down a drain pipe and make a break for her Land Rover. Paris made her way down the stairs a few minutes later, but she didn't head straight for the front door. She said, "Give me a minute, okay?" Reacher said, "What is it now?" "There's something I need to do. In private." "What?" "Say goodbye to Gibson." Fletcher stuck his body in our walk-in refrigerator. The unsanitary asshole. "You said you didn't like Gibson. He was a snitch. You wished someone had killed him." "So what if I didn't like him? I worked with him, and he's dead. That's enough. We have to be civilized, or what do we have left?" Did you love everyone whose funeral you went to? The van that Knight and the others were being transported in belonged to the Mount Pleasant Tennis Club from just outside Wichita, Kansas. The club was indeed pleasant. It had 6 courts, a clubhouse, a convenient parking lot, and a line of mature trees that separated the site from the nearby highway. The trees also screened off the pair of old shipping containers that had sat on the adjacent lot for so long that most of the members had ceased to notice they were there. The 2 guys in the cab were the owners of the tennis club. They were looking forward to getting back, especially since they now had 2 extra guests. The driver turned to his partner and said, "Worth it?" The guy shrugged. "The property developer thing? Easy money. This side gig? I don't know. The jury's out. Seems too good to be true. How can one report be worth so much? And Cone Dynamics? What kind of a company name is that?" "You might be right. But where's the harm? Nothing ventured, nothing gained." "We're going to..." The passenger's phone started to ring. He picked it up, glanced at the screen, and answered. He listened for a moment, then hit the speakerphone key. The voice on the line said, "We have a problem. You have to go back. Return the goods." The passenger said, "Really? Why?" "That's need to know, and you don't. But you do need to go back. Now, today. The goods need to be returned in 3 hours." "Not possible. We're already on the road." "Then go back. Tell whoever's squeezing your nuts that we need more time. A couple of days minimum. You have 3 hours, not a minute more." "We're not actually returning anything, right? We're playing along and adding to the collection. That takes time to prepare." "No, we're returning everything. In 2 hours 55 now. Sooner, if possible." "What's gotten into you? If there's some kind of problem, just do it. No debate." The passenger sighed. "Okay, I guess. But it's going to cost extra." The line went silent for a moment. Then the voice said, "How much?" 50%. 30. 50. Or we keep driving." "Fine. Now listen up. There are some special instructions this time. They need to be followed to the letter, or all hell's going to break loose." Chapter 25. The tennis club guys arrived at the cave 25 minutes ahead of their deadline. They bounced along the track between the spoil heaps, skirted around another panel van and a Land Rover that were parked close together, and pulled up a couple of feet shy of a white Ford truck. The driver shut off the engine. He left the keys in the ignition and climbed out. The passenger joined him. They looked around for a moment, taking in the rock and the gravel and the shiny metal door. The driver nudged the passenger and pointed to a spot above the center of its frame. He mouthed the word "camera." The passenger nodded and said, "Come on, let's go." He climbed up into the Ford. The driver got in behind the wheel and turned the key. The engine took a moment to catch. He said, "What a piece of garbage. I can't believe we're stuck with this." "Don't worry. I'll tell the property guy he owes us a bonus." "A big bonus." The driver nodded toward the back of the van. "I was looking forward to some fun." The driver swung the truck around and started toward the exit. The passenger was fiddling with the stereo. It wouldn't make a sound. Then the silence was shattered by a gunshot. The truck bucked a little. Steam started to pour from somewhere at the front. There was another shot. More steam gushed out. A hole was ripped in the dead center of the hood. The windshield shattered. A bullet tore through the wheel arch at the side of the load bed, and the left-hand rear tire exploded. The truck pulled to the side. The driver hit the brake and tried to correct the steering, but he was too late. He couldn't avoid planting the truck's nose 6 inches deep in the side of the spoil heap. The driver climbed out. He was shaking. The passenger tumbled down at the other side. They both looked around, stunned, trying to figure out who had fired on them. "Up here, gentlemen." Reacher got to his feet at the top of the right-hand spoil heap. The Glock was in his left hand. "Now move back behind the vehicle. Get down on your knees and lace your fingers behind your head." Neither man moved. Reacher put a bullet through the roof of the truck's cab. He said, "The next goes through one of you." The driver started to shuffle away from the truck. The passenger followed. They moved 10 feet clear of the tailgate, then slumped down. Reacher stayed still. The cave door slid open a couple of feet and Paris appeared. She was holding half a dozen plastic cups. She hurried toward the Ford and stopped when she was behind the driver. She guided his arms behind his back and looped a cuff around his wrists. She pulled it tight, then repeated the procedure with the passenger. Paris called, "They're good." Then she started toward the van the guys had brought. Reacher made his way down the spoil heap. He took his time, gun in hand, switching his glance back and forth between the two guys and the rocks and pebbles beneath his feet. Paris made it to the van. She took the keys from the ignition, looped around to the rear, and unlocked the double doors. She pulled the first one open. Then, from Reacher's viewpoint, it looked like a giant invisible hand had flung her onto the ground. Night appeared in the open doorway. She jumped down, stepped across to Paris, grabbed her by the blouse, lifted her head and chest, and punched her square in the face. Reacher herded the two guys across to the van. Neither would go near Knight, who was rubbing her bruised knuckles. Reacher said to her, "That's Paris, not one of the guys who grabbed you." Knight shrugged. "Solves a problem, though." Reacher pointed to the plastic cuffs Paris had dropped. Knight scooped up a couple and secured Paris's arms and legs. She said, "In the van?" Reacher nodded. Knight was favoring her left hand, but she was still able to haul Paris into a sitting position, lift her under the armpits, and push her through the open door. Knight looked at the two guys. She said, "Which of you assholes took my phone?" The passenger said, "It's in the front." Reacher opened the second of the van's rear doors and turned to the driver. He said, "Sit on the edge. Lift your feet. Do anything stupid, my friend will work out some more of her anger on you." The driver did as he was told, and Knight slipped a cuff around his ankles. She tightened it and then shoved him in the chest. He toppled back into the van's load space. She repeated the process with the passenger, told them both to bend their knees, then slammed the doors, closing them in. Knight breathed out heavily and stepped away from the van. Reacher said, "You okay?" "My hand's been better. The rest of me's fine. A little bruised, maybe, from being bounced around on the metal floor." She gestured to the truck and the wrecked Ford. "This was all you? How did you do it?" "A phone call. A couple of emails. Nothing to it."
"You sent emails?"
"Not personally."
"I was worried for a minute. I thought you must be a ringer."
She rubbed the skin on her wrists.
"But seriously, Reacher, thank you.
Bowery's in there. He's in bad shape. Mistook me for Paris and told me a bunch of things, including how those two guys made him watch them torture a man to death. They have a whole setup for it, a torture chamber with a viewing gallery for their next victim. If they'd got me there." She turned away and shivered.
"What else did Bowery say?"
"He got captured, was forced to give up Paris and Vidic. Then he promised to give them some kind of stolen document in return for his life. It's worth a fortune, he said. A report from a company called Cone Dynamics. Ever heard of them?"
"No. I wonder what their big secret is."
"I can't imagine. Probably some boring finance thing."
Reacher retrieved Knight's phone from the passenger door pocket in the tennis club van and used it to call Walwork. He wrapped up his summary and said, "So unless you know where I can get ribbon around here to tie a bow around everything for your agents, this is me signing off." Walwork said, "Good. Go.
The agents are only a half hour out now, maybe less. And if I've learned anything, it's that the more daylight there is between you and the Bureau, the better I sleep. You don't mean that. I do. And Reacher. Reacher didn't respond. Lose my number. Don't call me anymore. I mean it. Until next time, Walwork. There won't be any next time. Then let me ask you one last thing. Have you heard of a company called Cone Dynamics? No. Why? It's Paris's next hacking victim. I don't know anything about them. She stole a report. Apparently, it's worth a fortune. And that makes me curious. How could one document be so valuable? Reacher checked the van's doors one last time, then climbed into the Land Rover's passenger seat. Knight was already in the vehicle, waiting for him behind the wheel. She started the engine and took off slowly, threading her way through the gap between the spoil heap and the wrecked Ford. She picked up speed once they reached the smoother road and drove the rest of the way to the Russian's house in silence. Reacher watched her out of the corner of his eye. The expressions on her face kept changing. She looked angry one moment, then sad, then scared. Knight left the Land Rover on the street to save having to maneuver it into the space Kane's truck had been in. She finally smiled when she saw her old Toyota. Reacher jumped down, made his way through the gate, and climbed in. Knight followed, but diverted to the car's trunk. She popped the lid, leaned in, then a moment later straightened up and started for the house's front door. Reacher saw that she had something in her hand, a gun. It was the SIG he had taken from Fletcher and later stowed in her lockbox. Knight worked the keypad and pulled the handle. Reacher went after her. He caught the door before it closed and followed her into the hallway. She kept going straight, all the way to the kitchen door. She paused outside it long enough for Reacher to catch up. She took hold of the handle, turned to him, and said, "Give me a minute." Reacher said, "Whatever you need." "But are you sure about this? Some things can't be undone." "Am I sure? When did you become a comedian?" Kane was conscious. He had rolled over and pushed himself up into a sitting position, then shuffled back until he could lean against the wall. His phone and wallet were lying next to him on the floor. Kane's head snapped around toward the door. "What? Who the hell are you?" A smile crossed Knight's face, but it was full of sadness, not humor. She said, "Who am I?" "You don't know me. For weeks I've dreamed of finding you, making sure you know my name. I've pictured dozens of scenarios, hundreds. None like this, though. In my dreams, any time you'd been dumped on your ass and tied up, it was me who'd done it." "Did I knock you up? Sleep with your sister on prom night? You're pissed about something, I can see that." She took a step closer. "I'm Jenny Knight." Kane glanced at the gun in her hand. "You say that like it should mean something to me." "My father was Dennis Knight." "Are you going to run through your whole family tree? Because I can save you the trouble. I don't care who you are. I don't care about your relatives. Dennis Knight, my father. You killed him." Kane shrugged. "If you say so. You shot him down like a dog when all he was doing was his job, earning an honest buck." "Well, there's his mistake. Honest jobs don't pay for shit. Means you have to work long hours. Increases the risk of a workplace accident." Knight looked around for a chair, but there were none in the room, so she sat on the floor, cross-legged, 6 feet in front of Kane. She raised the gun so that it was lined up on his stomach. The muzzle was rock steady. She said, "You shot my father in the chest. Left him to bleed out. It took hours. I came to return the favor. Only you ran away after you pulled the trigger. I'm going to stay. I'm going to watch until the last breath has left your body.
Kane swallowed.
Don't do that. Let's talk. There must be something, what I came to do. Past tense. I've changed my mind.
Knight lowered the gun and got to her feet.
See, if I shoot you, it'll feel good for maybe an hour. But then I'd regret it. I know I would. Because you wouldn't die fast.
Oh, no. But it would still be too fast. Faster than spending the rest of your life in jail. Which is what's going to happen. The FBI will be here in minutes. They have a dead agent.
Knight looked Kane in the face. I hope no one meets them outside. Tells them you're to blame for that.
Knight was quiet until they were safely through the set of switchbacks. Then she glanced at Reacher and said,
So, what's next for you?
Reacher shrugged. I'll get back on the road, I guess.
You?
Go home. Get my job back. With Kane out of the picture, there's no reason not to.
I wish you luck.
Thanks.
Where are you heading?
New Orleans.
What's in New Orleans?
A new club opened. A band I like got a residency. I helped them with a thing a while back. Thought I'd catch a couple of shows, see how they're doing.
Some good clubs in Phoenix. You could come there.
Maybe I will one day.
You'll head out in the morning?
Maybe. Or tonight.
Tonight? So soon?
Why not? There's nothing to keep me here.
I guess not.
Knight glared at him, then leaned a little harder on the gas. The four guys hadn't taken much of a bite out of the drive back to Phoenix when they got the call from Kane. They had set out heading north on US 65 and then looped clockwise around the outskirts of Springfield. But instead of continuing until they hit I-44 like their phones told them to, they dived southwest onto US 60 and kept going until they reached a roadside bar between Monette and Yonkerville. The place was owned, indirectly, by a guy they had met in the state pen in Tucson. A live band was playing. The food was cheap. The portions were generous. The beer was cold. But the most attractive feature in their minds was the barmaids. As the neon sign above the door promised, they were all topless all the time. The conversation got off to a rocky start. Kane didn't know that Knight had sent the guys a text from his phone telling them to stand down, so he was expecting them to still be a couple of miles away, watching the other Russian houses. He was expecting them to be sitting in their cars, keeping a low profile. So he couldn't understand why there was so much background noise, and why, when he told them to come to his location, STAT, they said they would need such a long time to get there. It took a moment to straighten things out. Kane couldn't argue with them following his instructions, but he still wasn't happy. There was only one reason he could think of for Reacher to have tied him up and left him in the house. Fletcher had been right. Reacher was working for the FBI. Agents must be on their way. He told the guys not to spare the horses. Kane didn't say he was worried about the FBI showing up, but the guys weren't stupid. They could listen between the lines. When they got back, they drove past the house twice to be sure there were no nasty surprises waiting for them. Then one guy stayed in each car. One car was facing one way, one the other, and both had their engines running. The other two guys hurried to the house. One of them entered the number Kane had given them into the keypad, panicked for a moment when the door wouldn't open. Then the other guy remembered to pull it. They hurried inside, ran down the hallway, found Kane in the kitchen, cut his ties, and helped him to his feet. Kane led the way out of the house. He moved slowly at first. His joints and muscles were stiff after being tied in an unnatural position for so long. He was back to something like full pace when he reached the front door, but after he took one step out onto the driveway, he stopped. He said, "Where the hell is my truck?" The two guys looked at each other and shrugged. The first one said, "This guy Reacher. Maybe he took it." The other said, "Why not take the caddy or the jeep? That truck was a dog. You're better off without it." "Do you need another vehicle? We can take you wherever you need to go." Kane said, "I don't need the truck, but I do need the tools that are in it." Kane figured he had two decisions to make, whether to see if Fletcher and Vidic were still in the house, and whether it was still worth going to the cave, even without his tools. He decided not to go back inside. The FBI could arrive at any moment, and if they found Fletcher and Vidic, that could work to his advantage. They would be occupied with arresting them, processing them. They would have questions to ask, procedures to follow. Those would all take time. If they found the place empty, that would leave more agents free to search for him. He checked his pocket. He still had the key to the box van. Not as convenient as a heap of cash, but better than nothing. Chapter 26. Knight slowed down to a regular speed after a couple of miles, but she didn't say anything until she reached the motel by the highway. She pulled into the same space she had used before and left the engine running. She turned to Reacher and said, "Is this where you need to be? Or do you want me to leave you somewhere else?" Reacher said, "This is fine." Knight was silent for a moment. Then she nodded toward the diner. "Want to at least get a coffee before you go?" "Sure. Coffee is always good." Knight switched off the engine. They both got out, and Reacher led the way past the line of motel room doors to the diner's entrance. Hannah Mae was working that evening. She smiled when she saw Reacher and Knight walk in and offered them a table by the window. Reacher declined. He preferred the one he'd used before, tucked away at the back. Knight talked about her childhood, growing up in Arizona. Reacher told her about the different military bases he had lived on as a kid, the different countries, what was the same, what was different. Knight shared her favorite memories of college. Reacher told her about West Point, the place he'd remained in for the longest time, and for more than 3 decades, his principal experience of the United States. Hannah Mae arrived with a second coffee refill. She said, "Want anything to eat with that? We have a special pie today, rhubarb." Knight said, "I'll try some of that." Reacher said, "I'll stick with peach. I'll take a burger, too, with fries." Knight said, "I'll have a BLT, heavy on the bacon, light on the rest." They shared war stories from the early years of their careers while they waited for their food. They talked about their best cases, their worst, the ones that got away, the ones they couldn't forget. They settled into a comfortable silence as they ate, and when Hannah Mae tried to top up their coffee mugs for a fourth time, Reacher stopped her. He dropped some cash on the table. Knight matched it. Then they stood up and stepped outside. The sun had gone down by the time they came out. The lamps mounted on tall poles in the parking lot cast long shadows. There was a chill in the air. Reacher noticed Knight shiver. Reacher scanned the parking lot. No vehicles were moving. Knight saw what he was doing. She said, "Could be hard finding a ride at this time." Reacher said, "Could be. I'm going to get myself a room. Walk with me to the office." Kane was riding up front in the lead car. The driver made the turn into the track between the spoil heaps a little fast, jinked to the left, and slammed on his brakes. He had come within an inch of hitting another vehicle, a Ford F-150. Its nose was buried in the dirt. There were bullet holes in its windshield, and its rear tire was blown. Kane jumped out of the car and hurried around to take a closer look at his truck. It was in the last place he had expected to find it. and he couldn't understand how it had come to get shot up. The only thing he could figure was that Reacher had taken it from the Russian's house, driven it here looking for Paris, and that Paris must have gotten away on foot, climbed the heap, and shot at Reacher as he tried to chase her. There was no body in the cab, though, which was a shame. Kane looked up. It was too dark to make anything out at the top of the heap. He called out, "Paris? You up there? You okay?" There was no reply, so he climbed back into the car. The driver pulled away and headed for the cave's metal door. Kane saw the van that was full of their loot, still parked where he had left it, and next to it, another van, one he had never seen before. The driver pulled up next to the new van and switched off his engine. The second car pulled in next to him. Kane got out. He checked the new van's cab and saw its keys were in the ignition. Then he heard a voice. A man's. Kane didn't recognize it. It was coming from the back of the vehicle. It was calling for help. Kane took the keys and unlocked the rear doors. He saw the soles of 5 pairs of shoes. He recognized 3 of the bodies they belonged to. He pulled Paris out, and then Vidic. Kane said, "What the hell is going on here?" Vidic looked at Paris, then said, "To make a long story short, those 2 guys captured Bowery. They forced him to tell them about this place, then showed up here to rob it." Kane crossed his arms and said, "Then who stopped them?" "Not you, since you were locked up too. How did you get here?"
"Reacher jumped us in the middle of the job. He realized Paris was missing, forced me to show him where she was."
"He took my truck." Vidic nodded. "He was with a woman. She had a silver Toyota. He figured that if Paris saw a strange vehicle approach, she would be suspicious."
"So why not take your Jeep?"
"It was Reacher's call. He wanted your truck for some reason."
"How did it get wrecked and shot up?"
"Reacher got into it with these new guys. They ran, took the truck. Reacher stopped them."
Kane turned to the driver of the car he'd been riding in. "Got a knife?"
The driver handed him a switchblade. Kane popped it open and cut the ties from Vidic's wrists and ankles. He said, "Start walking." Then he turned to Paris. Vidic said,
"Walk?
Why?
There's plenty of space in your cars.
Better get going. The FBI will be here soon."
"You're leaving us here?"
Kane turned his back.
Vidic said, "Wait. What if I tell you I can make you a very rich man?"
Kane said, "I'm giving the stuff in the van to my boys here."
"I'm not talking about the van."
"Oh, you're thinking about the $2 million in the safe." Vidic didn't reply.
"You look surprised."
"Yes, I know about it. And yes, I know how to get it. Everything I need is in my truck."
Vidic said, "No, not the cash in the safe. That's pocket change compared to what I'm talking about."
"I'm not keeping you around so you can waste my time on some dumb pipe dream.
This is no dream. It's reality. It's something Paris and I have been working on for a while. It's already up and running, and it's set to bear fruit very soon. We'll cut you in if you help us now, and I'm not exaggerating. It will make you rich beyond your wildest dreams."
"Are you sure? My dreams are pretty wild."
"I'm sure."
"Then tell me more. Make me believe you." Reacher and Knight set off together, strolling, taking their time. When they were halfway across the gap between the buildings, a shadow broke away from the side of the motel. It split into 4 separate shapes. Arms and legs and heads came into focus. The guy who had tried to run Reacher off the day before was at the left-hand end of the line. He was wearing a black bike jacket, with sleeves this time, and jeans. The 3 other guys were dressed the same way. The familiar guy looked at Knight. He said,
"You can leave. Go back to your car. Drive away."
Knight said,
while you boys have all the fun? Not a chance. The guy turned to Reacher. He said, I told you if you came back, you'd regret it. Reacher said, shows what you know. What? I'm having a great time. He glanced at Knight. And the evening isn't over yet. It is over. The guy gave a signal with his right hand. The other three took a step forward. For you. Really? Reacher looked at each of the other guys in turn. He said, you don't have to do this. You can walk away. Right now, we're in a no harm, no foul situation. But when the first one of you tries something, all bets are off. None of the three new guys said anything. Knight said, this is ridiculous. Where do you guys get off? Attacking a guy with a broken arm. You're pathetic. The guy from the previous night pointed at Reacher. That's on him. He should have thought before he came back. A line of deep creases appeared along Reacher's forehead. He leaned toward the guy. You have something in your hair. Is it lettuce? Didn't you shower after I threw you in the pig swill? He stretched out his right arm as if he was going to brush something away with his finger. Did you make it all the way to the farm before they let you out of that dumpster? Did you feel at home with the hogs? The guy went to push Reacher's hand away, but before he made contact, Reacher jerked it back. He twisted his shoulders and transferred the momentum to his left arm. It shot out and around, and his fist caught the guy on the hinge of his jaw. He fell sideways into his buddy and wound up sprawled on the ground at the guy's feet. Reacher said, last chance. You can leave now, if you take your garbage with you. The guys closed ranks and stepped closer to Reacher and Knight. The one on the right said, or we could stay and take your chick. The guy stuck out his tongue and leaned forward, like he was going to lick Knight's cheek. She kicked him in the balls. He jackknifed at the waist and made a sound somewhere between a cough and a scream. Knight punched him in the face. He staggered back like he was trying to find his footing on an icy sidewalk, stayed upright for another moment, then crashed down onto the ground in a position that was almost the mirror image of the guy Reacher had hit. The guy who was closer to Reacher held up both his hands. He started to slink away backward. He said, this wasn't our idea. We don't want any trouble. Reacher said, you want to leave in one piece. You clean up. Take your trash with you. The guy leaned down. He grabbed the original guy's arms, hauled him up, flipped him over his shoulder, and started toward the parking lot. His buddy did the same with the guy who had wound up on the ground nearer him. Reacher said, you're going the wrong way. What? He pointed to the gap between the diner and the motel. Take them through there. Throw them in the pig swill. You don't mean it. Don't I? The Ford wasn't going anywhere under its own steam. That was clear. So when Kane had finished using his tools, he took them to one of his guys' cars and started loading them into the trunk. Paris grabbed Vidic by the sleeve and pulled him aside, out of earshot. She said, why the hell did you bring Kane on board? He's an oaf, a disgusting piece of crap. You know I can't stand him. Vidic said, all that is true. But he's a useful oaf. We would be heading to jail without him. Fair point. But telling him about the report, cutting him in? I'd rather set the money on fire than give any of it to him. Don't worry. He won't see a cent. We're going to use him one more time. Then we'll dispose of him. How? I have a plan. Similar to what we were going to do with Reacher. Okay. And what are we going to use him for? We have a problem. Those maniacs who snatched me from the Russian's house, they grabbed a woman at the same time because they thought she was you. They already had Bowery. He was really messed up. He also thought this woman was you. He started blabbing about the report, how it's worth a fortune, so he promised it to the guys in return for his life. So this woman knows about it? She does. Who is she? I don't know for sure.
but she's working with Reacher, which means very soon the FBI will find out about the report, too. Paris turned and started toward the van. Vidich said, "Stop. There's no point. Bowery didn't make it. He slipped away half an hour ago." "On his own? Or did you help him?" Vidich didn't answer. Paris said, "You knew he was dead and you didn't say anything? We were locked in the back of a van. If you'd known there was a corpse in there with us, what would you have done?" Paris was silent for a moment. "I can't believe this is happening. We're so close. We can't fail now." "We won't. I have a plan. A framework, anyway. I need to think. The time, the route, the location. They all have to dovetail perfectly. There's no room for error. And I need the answers quickly. This has to be done tomorrow." Reacher and Knight waited for the guys to reappear. They watched them scuttle to the parking lot and jump into a beat-up old Chevy Camaro. Its motor was reluctant to start. It eventually caught, rough and raw, but it kept going long enough to get them out of sight. Knight nodded toward the office. She said, "I'm going to get that room. It's kind of late. Do you want to stay? Try for a ride in the morning." Reacher said, "Sure." "Good. I'll take care of it. But we're getting two rooms, okay?" Reacher nodded. He watched her disappear through the door. Then something else caught his eye. A triangle of light suddenly appeared in room two's window. A corner of the drape had been pulled back. It fell back into place and the window went dark again. Reacher figured a motel guest must have been disturbed by the noise. Not a problem in itself. But there was always the risk a nervous person might call the police. Reacher stepped across to the door and knocked. There was no response. He knocked again and said, "Hey, I know you're in there. I just want to talk. No need to open the door all the way. Use the chain. Open it just a crack." There was still no response. Reacher knocked again. "Come on. I can do this all night. Can you?" The door opened wide. A young woman was standing at the threshold. She had on a pink nightdress. She had long red hair and heavy makeup. Reacher said, "You okay, miss?"
"Why wouldn't I be?"
"I noticed you peeking out from a corner of the drapes. I thought maybe you saw what happened with those guys. I wanted to reassure you, there's nothing to worry about. We're old friends. We've known each other since second grade. It was some harmless fun that got a little out of hand. You know how guys are. We'll shake hands and it'll all be forgotten in the morning." "A, that's bullshit. B, you're way off base. And C, you want to make sure I didn't just dial 911. Did you? That would be about the stupidest thing I could possibly have done. So, no. I am a little pissed, though." "How so?" "You had a great chance. They were asking for it. You're obviously capable. But you didn't touch two of them. You let them walk away." Reacher thought for a moment. "Are you working?" "Not right now." "But you do work from this room." "Is that why you're here? To save my soul?" Knight emerged from the office. She saw Reacher and came over to his side. She said, "What's going on?" Reacher said to the woman in the nightdress, "I need to know if you saw someone yesterday." He turned to Knight. "You got that photo of Gibson?" Knight pulled out her phone. She fiddled with it for a moment, found the picture, and said, "I have to warn you. This is an image of the victim of an accident. It shows a person who is no longer alive. Are you okay to look at it?" The woman said, "You think I'm a blushing flower? Show me." Knight held up the phone. The woman said, "It's possible I saw him, I guess. My memory's a little foggy." Reacher pulled out his bundle of banknotes and peeled off 2 twenties. He held them out, but he didn't let the woman take them. She said, "I more than saw him, and not just yesterday." Reacher said, "He was a regular customer? Not one of my best, not one of my worst." "When you say you saw him yesterday, do you mean walking by, going to another room?" "He wouldn't dare, and the other girls wouldn't take him. No, I saw him in here for the full 90 minutes. Reacher let the woman take the 2 twenties. He peeled another 2 off his roll. "I have a couple more questions. They may sound strange, but I need you to answer. There's no right or wrong. Nothing that can hurt you in any way. Just tell me what you remember, okay?"
"Go for it."
"When you were done, before he left, did you come to the door with him?"
"Sure.
I gave him a kiss on the cheek and sent him on his way, like I always do." "What were you wearing?"
"I wear whatever I get paid to wear. That particular guy liked me to be smart. Kind of like I was his boss at an office or something. Like he was having an affair with a coworker, not this. Weird, I know. But hey, I'm not judging."
"You took time out of the 90 to change. It's all part of the fantasy. What he wanted. We finished up, chilled for a few minutes, then took a shower together, got dressed, and pretended we were taking separate cars back to wherever we worked."
"What did you do after he left?
Get ready for the next guy?"
"Not yesterday. I didn't have another appointment until the evening. So I went home for a while, did some laundry."
"What kind of car do you have?"
"A Crown Vic. Former cop car.
Ironic, huh?" Vidic walked over to one of the cars and opened the passenger door. Paris hurried after him. She grabbed his arm and said, "Wait, I'm still not sure about this. I think maybe I should do the flight. You do the drive."
Vidic smiled at her. He said, "Admit it. You just don't want to be in a car with Kane."
"Would you? But that's not the point. You were unconscious. Your IDs were in your wallet. Do you think Reacher saw them? Do you think he told anyone?"
"There's no way to be certain."
"Mine were in my purse. I think they're a safer bet. We should use one of mine." "This is the sketchiest part of the plan. I get that. But I know how these guys work. It's better if I do it."
"You think?"
"There are no guarantees in this life, Paris. You know that. But this is our best shot. Trust me. Suck it up. A car ride with the asshole, then a flight. That's all. Then we'll be free and clear."
Reacher thanked the woman and gave her the other 2 twenties. He turned and walked away. Knight kept pace and slipped her arm through his. She said, "I have a confession."
"What did you do?"
"I only booked one room."
Chapter 27 Reacher woke first the next morning. He got dressed, slipped out of the room, and went to the diner. He got coffee, 2 carryout cups. He brought them back, and when he got to the room, Knight was awake. She was sitting up in bed with a sheet pulled up to her chest. She said, "Is everything okay?"
Reacher said, "Yes."
"Why wouldn't it be?"
"Your expression. You look worried."
"I'm not worried. I thought I smelled smoke is all. Very faint. I was trying to figure out where it came from."
"Maybe it came from in here? Things did get pretty hot last night."
She folded back the covers on Reacher's side of the bed.
"Maybe we should recreate the conditions, see if it happens again. Purely in the interest of science."
Reacher set the coffee cups down on the desk and stepped toward her. Her phone began to ring. Reacher said, "Ignore it."
Knight checked the screen. It's your buddy Walwork. Shouldn't you see what he wants?
Damn.
Reacher took the handset and hit the answer key. Yes? Walwork's voice sounded hoarse. He said,
Where are you?
At the motel where Gibson met his handler, although we have new information about that meeting. Reacher looked at Knight. Her sheet had slipped down a few inches. He had a feeling that wasn't an accident. Walwork said,
Shame. I was hoping you'd be far, far away by now.
Why?
Two agents are on their way there to look for you and Detective Knight.
Us? Why? Pretty much everything you touched yesterday has gone to shit. When the agents got to the Russian place, Kane had escaped. At the cave, Vidic and Paris had gone missing. Bowery was dead. And when they searched the gang's house, an agent tripped a booby trap. A vial of phosphorus had been propped up behind a door, right by Gibson's body. The entire place burned down.
Sounds like a fiasco.
No kidding. Although it's not a total loss. They have Fletcher, and several vehicles, including Gibson's, which was recovered from the crash site. His cell phone was still inside, wedged down the side of the driver's seat. They pulled prints and DNA from all over the place. The DNA will take a while, but the prints were confirmed as his. And when the fire department releases the house, I'm sure our techs will confirm human remains. Probably won't be able to pull DNA from them, though.
So why are the agents coming after us? None of this is our fault.
They want to talk to you both. I guess Knight is about to find out what happens to people who help you.
Talk to us about what? We didn't lose any suspects. We didn't light anything on fire. And we only left the scene because you asked us to.
Reacher heard a rustling sound from the bed. He glanced over and saw that Knight was kneeling up now. The sheet was pulled right up to her chin and her face was suddenly pale. Walwork said,
I know.
But the loss of Gibson's body complicates the formal ID. And with a couple of the other guys in the wind, the bosses want as much information as possible to help kickstart the search. And,
Reacher?
Yes?
I need you to do me a solid here. Go along with these guys. Don't resist. Don't run. Answer their questions. And don't get smart. Can you do that?
Reacher didn't reply.
Walwork said, This is important. You know how the politics work. If we had gotten a result, I would be a genius for thinking outside the box. That's kind of my thing. But if this goes south, all the blame will land on me instead. For sharing sensitive information with an unauthorized person. You. I could be in seriously hot water. I could get fired. I could lose my pension.
Reacher didn't respond.
They'll only need you for 24 hours. 48 max.
Reacher laughed.
What's funny?
That's exactly what Vidic said to me at the start of all this. I didn't believe him either.
Reacher was standing at the window looking out for the agents' cars. Knight was sitting on the bed, lacing up her shoes.
I'm so pissed at myself. So pissed. I should have seen it.
Reacher said, Take it easy on yourself. You weren't the only one there. I saw it. I didn't figure it out.
I don't mean seen it literally. I should have seen the implication, the possibility, the blindingly obvious certainty. How could you have done that? You're a Luddite. You don't even own a phone. What do you know about Siri, virtual assistants, voice control?
Reacher shrugged.
Exactly. How could you know? But I do. I use Siri all the time. And I was so taken up with wanting to put the fear of God into Kane, to making sure he knew I could have killed him if I wanted to. I didn't make the connection. His phone was right there by his side. It didn't matter that his hands were tied behind his back. He could have called anyone he wanted.
The four guys we sent away, presumably. We must have missed them by minutes.
Knight threw herself back on the bed. So it's even worse. I should have kept his phone when I sent that text, or smashed it. But he was unconscious then. I didn't think about him waking up and being able to talk. And I figured the feds would want the phone when they showed up. Maybe there was something useful in it, and I had no idea we'd be coming back to the house. Reacher gave her a minute to clear her head and then said, What did you make of the hooker's story? The woman from room two. I meant to ask you last night, but I got distracted. Knight sat up again and said, It was kind of strange, wasn't it? Do you think Vidich could have been confused? He said he was watching the rooms from the diner. We don't know what his eyesight is like. There could have been people in the way, milling around. He could have mixed up the door numbers. Rooms one and two are next to each other. Possible. The woman said she was dressed smart as a typical agent, maybe, from a distance. She said she left the room a few minutes after Gibson, and if she drives an old detective special, that could easily be confused for a bureau car by a layperson. I could buy Vidich being confused, or paranoia playing a part, but here's the thing. The bureau confirmed that Gibson was an agent. Now they've ID'd his prints from his Lincoln, too. If Vidich actually saw him with a hooker, not a handler, and jumped to the right conclusion for the wrong reason, isn't that a little coincidental? Not necessarily. No? No. Here's an example. Were you good at math at school? I got by. See, I was terrible. But I remember this one time in sixth grade, we got a new math teacher. She came in early her first morning, wrote a problem on the board, told us to try to solve it. It was super difficult. She was sure no one would be able to. It was supposed to be a motivational thing for the rest of the year. Work hard and you'll get it in the end. But the funny thing is, when I tried, I completely scrambled the method, but somehow got the answer right. It was a total fluke, a mistake. The teacher was so mad at me. Maybe Vidich did something like that. Maybe. But I guess the clincher is whether there actually was a handler at the motel that day. We have some quality time coming up with the Bureau. Let's see if our new friends will share. Reacher saw a pair of vehicles approaching, Chevy Suburbans, both black. They were close together, one in front of the other, and hints of shiny paint glinted through a thick coat of road dust. They ignored the open spaces in the parking lot and drove right up to the motel room door. Reacher stepped outside. Knight followed him. An agent jumped down from each of the SUVs. Hands were shaken. IDs were checked. Then the agent from the lead Suburban helped Knight into his back seat. He climbed in and pulled away. The second agent opened his back door. Reacher stayed where he was. He said, Where are we going? The agent said, I'm not at liberty to. I am at liberty, literally. And I'm going to stay that way unless you lighten up. The agent thought for a moment, then said, Fine. You'll see for yourself soon, anyway. It's a house, one of the crime scenes, owned by some Russians and crammed full of smuggled goods. Everything's been confiscated now and the building's been commandeered. There's nothing else suitable nearby. Do you have a coffee pot there? I don't know. I don't drink coffee. Think. This is important. I can't be sequestered somewhere with no available caffeine. That wouldn't end well for anyone. One of the agents brought something. Not a pot, one that works with pods. As long as it makes coffee, it'll do. Reacher walked around the Suburban and got into the passenger seat. The agent shrugged, climbed in himself, and headed for the exit. He hit the gas a lot harder than the agent who was driving Knight had done. Reacher thought it was maybe a good job that the guy had no caffeine in his system. He knew firsthand what happened to drivers who took the upcoming switchbacks too fast.
Fletcher's Escalade was gone when Reacher arrived at the house. So were Vidich's Jeep and Paris's Land Rover. Their places in the driveway had been taken by three more black Suburbans. Knight was standing by the front door. She was talking to a guy Reacher hadn't seen before. He was tall and thin. He was wearing a plain black suit. His head was shaved, and the morning sunlight was reflecting off it. He was wearing small round wire glasses, which made him look studious. And he was gesticulating enthusiastically with his hands. Reacher pegged him as the local guy in charge, probably looking to make a good impression with his people before the bigger hitters arrived from Quantico. Reacher waited for the agent to come around and open his door. Then he climbed down and made his way toward Knight and the tall guy.
"I'm Supervisory Special Agent O'Connelly," the guy said. He offered his hand. "Thanks for coming. We'll take up as little of your time as possible." He nodded toward the door. "Let's get started."
Inside, the house was fundamentally the same as it had been the day before, only all the crates and packages had been removed, and it had already picked up the vibe of an office or an institution rather than a home. O'Connelly led the way to the dining room. A picnic table had been set up in the center. It had a plastic top and folding metal legs. Four collapsible chairs were arranged around it. They looked like they'd been bought from a camping store, Reacher thought. Maybe this was an example of the kind of out-of-the-box thinking that Walwork aspired to. O'Connelly ushered Reacher through the door. He said, "Wait here, please. Someone will be with you in a minute." Then he guided Knight toward the kitchen. Reacher looked at the chairs and decided to sit on the floor. 5 minutes ticked by. 10. He smiled to himself. The accommodations might have been unconventional and the furnishings improvised, but the Bureau's tactics were still the same. That was clear. Make the suspect wait, alone and in silence. Isolation ratchets up the tension. Silence breeds the urge to speak, and speaking in a tense situation can easily lead to a confession. Reacher assumed they would be doing the same with Knight. He hoped she would keep a lid on the guilt she felt about not realizing Kane had summoned help, which had led to his escape, especially since it looked like her interview was going to happen in the place Kane had escaped from. It was possible that a smart agent could connect those dots without her saying anything. If that happened, they would deal with it down the line. But there was no point in inviting trouble by incriminating yourself. Reacher lay down. His mind wandered back to the drive from the motel. Figures floated into his head. Speeds, distances. Given a spell of downtime, he could never resist running random calculations. The shapes and patterns that numbers form themselves into always soothed him, like the harmonies in a perfectly constructed musical phrase. He started with distance. The stretch of road from the motel to the house was roughly 10 miles long. He had been driven on it by three people that he could remember: Vidich, Knight, and that morning's agent. The agent had been the fastest. He had averaged a whisker over 60 miles per hour, making the journey last 10 minutes. The agent driving Knight had left 2 minutes earlier. Knight was already talking to O'Connelly when Reacher arrived at the house. So he assumed that she must have arrived at least a minute before him. That meant the slowest her agent could have driven was 54.5454 miles per hour. Reacher liked that. He enjoyed coming across quirky results, like prime numbers or recurring decimals. He shifted his focus to the split time from the motel to the switchbacks, hoping for more of the same. But he came to a much less satisfying conclusion, not because of the numbers involved, because of the people. The distance from the motel to the switchbacks was roughly 5 miles. According to Vidich, he had left the motel 5 minutes after Gibson, and he had caught up with him just before the switchbacks. There was a problem with that, Reacher realized. Even if he assumed that Vidich had raised his game and had driven as fast as the agent had done that morning,
All Gibson would have had to do was average above 30 miles per hour. Then he would have been through the switchbacks before Vidic got to them. Gibson was a trained agent. He knew his cover was blown. He was effectively running for his life. Was it reasonable to believe that he would drive at less than 30 miles per hour, when it was possible for people with the same training to do 55 or 60 on that stretch of road? Reacher didn't think so. It was another anomaly in Vidic's story. And Reacher didn't like anomalies.
Chapter 28.
Reacher had moved on from math in his head to music when the door to the room opened. He was halfway through a live version of You Done Me Wrong by Sean Holt. He was enjoying it. He was inclined to make whoever had finally arrived wait until the end of the song before he acknowledged them. But in the end, he didn't, because of something he smelled. He sat up and saw a woman in a dark pantsuit and cream blouse settling into one of the collapsible chairs on the far side of the picnic table. She had dark hair cut short, minimal makeup, flat shoes, and no jewelry. A disposable plastic cup was sitting on the table in front of her. She pushed it toward Reacher and said, "I heard you like coffee. This is from my own supply. If you enjoy it, let me know."